Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Archer Mayer is the author of the highly acclaimed Vermont-based series featuring Detective Joe Gunther, which the Chicago Tribune describes as the best police procedurals being written in America. In the new book, Paradise City, Joe Gunther and his team in the Vermont Bureau of Investigation are alerted to a string of unrelated burglaries across Vermont. Someone, in addition to flat screens, computers, and stereos, has also been stealing antiques and jewelry. Meanwhile, in Boston, an elderly woman surprises some thieves in her Beacon Hill home and is viciously murdered. The Boston police find that not only is the loot similar to what's being stolen in Vermont, but it may have the same destination. Word is out that someone powerful is purchasing these particular kinds of items in the Paradise City of Northampton, Massachusetts. Again, the name of the new book is Paradise City, and it's a pleasure to welcome an old friend, Archer Mayer, back to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being here. Always a delight.
Well, it's a delight for me too, Joe, and I have to compliment you on your submission of a book for which I am often asked a description, and I'm always tongue-tied and fumble around, and I'd like to steal that cheat sheet at the end of the show.
You certainly can.
Thank you.
One of the things that I find fascinating about this book, and I'll ask it as question number one, which is what drew you, what lured you, if you will, to cross state lines?
Well, a couple of things. One is that it's not that far from Vermont. In fact, Northampton's just on the other side of the border and bears an uncanny resemblance to Brattleboro, only Brattleboro being a third of the size and maybe an eighth of the economic might. Is a kind of wannabe Northampton, especially lately with financial reversals across the state of Vermont. So a lot of Brattleburians have loved over the generations to go across the border and visit Northampton, and I and my daughter have been certainly among them. And I wanted to, in part, examine where from this funny alliance, this quasi-sisterhood, because Northampton people would also come up to Brattleboro and enjoy the music scene there. Brattleboro is nicknamed the weirdest town in Vermont. Of course, I gave it that nickname. So, but Northampton is three or four times its level of weirdness, and that's pretty appealing to someone like me.
There is such a sense of place to this book, and anyone who has spent any period of time in Northampton will find this even more appealing and fun. But what do you think there is about the place? Because Vermont has always given this label, too, of being odd, being weird. And I guess, what do we mean by that? Because it does, ultimately, what it does is bring people in to bask in the weirdness.
Yes. Well, what it brings to me is an extra layer of obfuscation, and I always love those. So if I'm given a town which is known for a certain attribute and basically lives up to it and nothing else, then in a way I'm kind of bored by it, so I walk away. But Northampton has this label. But if you look carefully at Northampton, as in fact Tracy Kidder did in his book about the town of several years ago, which I believe is called Hometown, you get an education, as I did personally when I did the research for this, of quite a few layers, social, economic, cultural. You have Old Hamp, which is quite conservative and bedrock. You have this newfangled Northampton, which is filled with countercultural, extremists of one sort or another, and everything in between. You also get the professional Northampton, the folks that are still actually running around wearing coats and ties and running hospitals. And there's even a periscope factory in the middle of Northampton that turns out high security stuff for submarines. It's a pretty curious place. And it, like Brattleboro, has many similarities to Brattleboro, I should say. Both of them either currently host or used to host state mental facilities. Northampton's was decommissioned, but it used to be vast at 2,500 patients. Both of them have hospitals. Both of them have colleges, Northampton full-fledged and Smith College, Brattleboro with community colleges and extensions from Marlborough, and on down the line. So in a funny kind of way, I was able to bring some of Joe's baggage to Northampton and then use it to analyze Northampton through its own prism or magnifying lens.
Usually in your work, you're going after a specific issue, whether it be something, a social issue, something that is perplexing for our time, whether it be a form of abuse or mm-hmm. of drugs or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
For this, you had the place, then how do you match it up with the thing?
Well, the place is famous for what? And the what is answered in many ways, artsy-wartsy, okay? Well, the artsy is very strong, jewelry making, wild macrame, if you will, what they call yarn bombs or knitting bombs, where people creep out in the middle of the night and actually wrap trees with yarn or knitting. They're a little bit crazy down there. So in part and parcel of this is that of the many fairs and festivals and art craft shows that are featured in Northampton several times a year, you will see jewelry, the kind of stuff that one of my sisters turns out. Rings, bracelets, stuff that she makes herself, sometimes constructed of very expensive materials. I have another sister. I have quite a few sisters. But another sister once married a crook. And this crook, with whom she was married very briefly, used to buy her fancy jewelry with a down payment on a forged check. He would then insure it to the max. He would then break into his own house, steal the jewelry. He'd break it apart, turn it into several different pieces of jewelry, and sell it. So he's making profit six ways towards the middle, including collecting on the insurance once he settled with them.
Wow.
Right. So I always liked this guy. But we won't share that with anyone. Anyhow, he sort of stayed in the back of my brain, despite the fact my sister quite wisely got rid of him many, many, many decades ago. And I thought, you know, there is some sanity to this lunacy if you did it properly, if you actually made a business model based on stealing your raw material and reconstructing it into sellable art. So that was kind of the construct. And then I went to the first sister I referred to, who is actually a jewelry maker, and I said to her, how does this system work? We know nothing about it. Where do the raw materials come by? What is the commerce that is involved in an end result that you can find at a local fair? That proved kind of interesting to me because there's no regulation, there's no oversight, no one pays attention to this. And yet gold and jewelry and semi and fully precious stones are trading hands on a regular basis. Well, that was kind of interesting enough to me to visit it upon Northampton and to make a task force situation where you'd have Vermonters coming from the north and the Boston cops coming from the east and commingling and getting together for the last third of the book in Northampton.
The name of the book is Paradise City. It's a Joe Gunther novel. Archer Mayer is our guest this week on the book show. As you mentioned, the Boston cops coming from the east, coming to the center of the Bay State of Massachusetts. And you write about, I think, rather beautifully of what that can be like in the balance of the big city versus local law enforcement.
Yeah. I have three theaters of operation. I have the Boston cops and how they interact with each other in some scenes. I have the Northampton police, who are given this monumental challenge of operating as a law enforcement agency in the midst of a society that basically really wants nothing to do with them, but utterly relies upon them when things go wrong. So there's a real tightrope walker in the chief of Northampton, who became a friend in the process of this research. And then last but not least, you get Joe Gunther, whom we know all too well through the preceding 22 books, who comes parachuting down out of Vermont, a totally rural state, into this area, which, by the way, is part of the Springfield Metroplex. Now, the population of that metroplex happens to equal the entire residency of the state of Vermont. So I love the sort of the combination and contrast of those three environments commingling in this book. And so you could see the different styles. The Boston cop, for example, comes into this and sort of looks around and very quickly kind of goes, well, tell me when it's over. And he disappears, understandably, because he's used to a totally different level of operations. Whereas Joe Gunther, sticks with it to the bitter end because it's a much bigger deal to him.
Being a law enforcement officer yourself, do you feel that pressure of having to get along with others when it comes to law enforcement?
Well, I enjoy it, but I won't deny that certain departments or areas have a reputation that unfortunately they may have earned and deserved. Fortunately, I didn't have to really deal with that in this case. In fact, just the reverse, because when I walked into Northampton, I realized that whatever struggles the Brattleboro police might have with its residents was nothing compared to what the police department in Northampton has to deal with, because Northampton is such a much more outspoken, wealthy, vital, and vibrant community. I mean, they have an enormous workload. And so it was fascinating to me to walk into Northampton not quite sure what to expect and instead finding this entire department is really on the ball. And that was fun to see law enforcement being practiced at a very high level. Now, it's not to take a shot at Brattleboro or Boston, but both of those guys are under different types of pressure than Northampton is. And Northampton has really made an art form out of community policing, which is fascinating for me to watch and to study. So it behooves me to befriend these guys, even if maybe privately, let's invent a different situation, if I were to go into a totally different cop shop, as they call it, and let's say I didn't like them much, it would still behoove me to befriend them, to get inside, to exchange my badge for theirs, in effect, to get the inside message. Now, would I use that to dump on them? No, but I might use what I gain to say, well, these guys are not quite as nimble or thoughtful about their approach as others might be. And I wouldn't be shy of mentioning that.
When it comes to the type of department that Northampton is or Brattleboro is, how much does it have to do with the economics? As you have labeled Northampton to be a wealthy region, but also is in this, as you called it, the Springfield Metroplex with Holyoke and Springfield that has great poverty in it. So to put that all into one cage, if you will, seems to allow it to battle out a bit. Does it put a defined stamp on the department and the people who are working those streets?
Absolutely. Because let's stick with the Metroplex for a moment. You mentioned Holyoke, Springfield, and Northampton in one breath. And that's appropriate because of their amazing contrasts. Holyoke, for example, just got itself a brand new police department, or building, I mean. And you think to yourself, oh, well, okay, so they did that. Well, in fact, they got it through a lawsuit because their pre-existing police building was in such disrepair that it was almost illegal to inhabit it. Okay? Northampton also just got a brand new building for their police department. Why? Because everyone chipped in and supported it. Because the police department has done that good a job. Also, look at the economics. If you drive into Holyoke, you can see entire city blocks that remind you of 1946 Berlin. They look bombed out. There's nothing there but rubble. You go into Northampton, and you see money being demonstrated and manifested and heralded in some form or another, wall to wall. It's a wealthy town. And that absolutely reflects in the equipment, in the mood, in the attitude of the police officers. So Brattleboro is kind of betwixt and between. Brattleboro, the cops are in an old 1800s municipal center. They just passed a vote for a $14 million enhancement to the police department. So that sounds great. But in the same breath, they didn't okay the money. So I don't know how they're going to work that one out. But there you have this sense that, okay, we understand that they got to do what they got to do, and we understand they're working in this derelict old building. And so, yes, we will let them conceptually have their new toys, but they won't pay for it. You get this snapshot of the greater society by seeing how they support their police department and how the police department functions. In many ways, Joe, the funny thing to me is that regardless of whether, or as cops say, irregardless, of whether you are a police officer or not, I always go to the cops first, even before I was a cop and just writing the series of books. I'd go to them first to ask them about their town. And part of that was so I could gain access to the police department itself and to see them interacting with each other, look at their equipment, sense their mood, and use that as a kind of dipstick to the greater community around them.
When you look at 23 novels featuring this character of Joe Gunther, so you set the place, you set the scene. Is it your curiosity driving this, or is it Joe Gunther's curiosity in guiding this as to where the story goes?
I think it's my curiosity, and he's my bloodhound. Yeah, I use him as a device to sniff out the stuff I know too little about and about which I want to learn.
Because there are writers who have sat exactly where you're sitting and have said, I am but just the scribe.
Yeah.
And that character tells me where to go right or to go left.
Within a scene, they're not wrong, and I would share that bizarre out-of-body experience. It is true that when I write these books, I do so from the seat of my pants. I have curiosity. I have ignorance I wish to abate, and I go in pursuit of the answers when I do my research. But the one thing I don't do in the midst of sucking up all this research is I don't put down a plot or an outline. That I want to leave loosey-goosey. I do want the characters to stroll around all the facts that I've accumulated and to pick and choose among them to set the course for the plot. So, for example, I alluded to a periscope factory. Does that appear in the book? No, it does not. Because as cool as that was, as totally nifty as a periscope factory, I mean, come on, who can resist that as a writer? And yet, it didn't work out because my characters just didn't end up going there. It didn't make sense in the overall structure of the book. So you learn to pay attention to the instincts of your characters because, after all, they are reflecting your inner drives and needs.
I mean, the one thing I've always liked about you as an author is how much you get out there and talk to people and are on the streets as a law enforcement agent. So does that have an impact from book to book and how this character has grown?
I think it has in a funny way that I haven't really thought about. It's an interesting question because oftentimes I don't think to become too introspective about this stuff in terms of the value that I get from meeting all my readers. It is my contention, and always has been, that I do not write books to my readers. I write books with my readers. They have enormous creativity and imagination, and it is my job to tread the middle ground between setting forth a novelistic idea and letting their creative powers fill in many of the blanks and many of the colorations. So in a way, what I want to do is never forget that we're all readers first. That's how we all start. And to never forget that a happy reader is a reader with a movie projector in his or her brain. And it's those images and sounds and smells and sights and whatnot, emotions that we, the reader, are following. So the writer needs to herald that and trigger it and seduce it, if you will. And that's what I'm partly doing when I go out and I meet my readership face to face, is I ask them, kind of like Mayor Koch used to, how am I doing? And they inform me not just how am I doing, but what am I doing and what bothers them and what irritates them. Willie Kunkel, for example, is a prominent character in my cast of regulars. And he's very cranky, cantankerous, very rough-edged guy. And yet, he is as prominent as he is in the series because my readers in these encounters inform me of his value to them. He became an outlet to the inner Willie in all of us. Many of us sit around a table looking at our boss, shoot his mouth off, being dead wrong. And we think to ourselves, ah, come on, boss, you know, I'm yearning to set you straight. But you don't, because you don't want to get fired, you don't want to get in trouble. Willie speaks his mind all the time. And when I began to find out how I had created this bridge to my readers in this character, he became even more prominent. And now these are as much Willie books as they are Joe books in a funny kind of way, because all of us have a little bit of Joe and maybe a whole lot of Willie in us.
And he also seems to have come, for many of us, to be the quintessential Vermonter.
Yes, well, that's true. And I think that's a little easy, to be perfectly honest.
Sure.
Because, again, I will put Willie in every single one of us. So you can hide behind the Vermonter fig leaf, but let's not kid a kidder. Also, where was Willie from? New York.
What do you make of that fig leaf? The Vermont label, the brand.
I turn it upside down and backwards. One of my ambitions from the start when I began this series in the mid-1980s was that I would not write about happy cows, sweet maple syrup, satisfied skiers, or beautifully turning leaves. Now, I have alluded to all those things. I even wrote a book about the ski industry, but it was about corruption.
Aha!
Aha! And I wrote about cows, but it was about corruption. So, in other words, I identified what is the Vermont cachet and what the CA, you know, the Chamber of Commerce embraces, and then I turned it on its ear, and I went for the rural, poor underbelly that is as much Vermont as it is parts of Rhode Island or Massachusetts or New York or Michigan or wherever. These are common bedrocks to all of our states. If we get above that bedrock and then we start identifying, oh, well, we have foliage and you don't down in Texas, well, okay, that's fine. But that misses my point. And my point is that I write about the everyman and the everyman in crisis, under stress. And that's the commonality that I wanted to bring out of Vermont and to share with everybody so that people who know Vermont can read these books and enjoy them. People in Palo Alto, California can read them and go, oh, well, that sounds just like, you know, my cousin Louie down at the mobile home, you know, at the end of the block.
We talked about the if there is a conflict between various stages of law enforcement, local and out-of-towners. Do you see that with Vermont? The I was born here Vermonter versus the
sure.
newcomer.
Oh, yeah. I get it, in fact, because I was not born in Vermont. I came to Vermont 32 years ago and began to become a chronicler of Vermont. I mean, I'm now one of the people who write about the state and who is looked to in that light. In fact, I've heard I'm about to be anointed in December with the governor's award for excellence in the arts. So I become one and all with this vision of Vermont. I will occasionally be giving a talk to a library or a meeting or whatnot, and I'll have someone in the back say, okay, so here you are, you're being recognized for all your efforts and whatnot, and it's not great. Now you're Mr. Vermont because of all this interminable series of books. But were you a native? Were you born here? And the implication of the question is, do you know what you're talking about because you weren't born here? You know, I usually have some polite sort of one-liner, and I certainly am very proud to say, well, I'm a guy of the road. I was brought up. I lived in 30 different places when I was growing, and I settled here. And I can't say I'm a native, but Vermont gave me a home, and the first time that I ever felt that I belonged anywhere was in Vermont. Having said that, I did snap a little the last time someone turned to me and said, well, you're not a native. And I said, ma'am, I got to be perfectly honest with you. I have arrested a number of natives for behaving in a fashion that you would not want to brag about. And I have also stood company with several people who were born outside the state, but who have made Vermont their home and tout it better than any homegrown hornblower I've ever met. So beware what you wish for. An accident of birth is just geographical. It's what you bring, your heart, your brain, your effort, your enthusiasm, what you do for your fellow human being. And that's one of the reasons that I spent 25 years in firefighting and EMS and the police, and I also work for the medical examiner as a death investigator. I do these things, yes, for the experience, and yes, because it betters my brain, but I also do some of this stuff to give back. I want to be more than a chronicler. I also want to be part of the solution to what makes society tick.
The name of the book is Paradise City. It is published by Minotaur Books. Archer Mayer, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being here as always.
My pleasure, Joe. Thanks again.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.